Oh, good evening. Nice to be back. Hope you all had a nice Thanksgiving. I did. It was lovely. All my great big boys were there. So Donalyn took this seat last week, and what did you talk about?
Not hoarding the Dharma.
Oh, good.
Generosity.
Yes. Yes. No hoarding materials or teachings. Yeah. So, is there more to say about that? Is that done?
We won't do it again.
Maybe you could do a little summary on it in a few sentences, just from a different angle, maybe.
Well,
I guess she did include what you said in it, in the handout she gave.
The Bodhidharma version of it.
I think your name was there from a talk from like 2000.
Oh, right, right.
I guess I can't remember what it was. If
you
don't want to talk about it, we can read it again.
Well, I've got what Carden and Dogen said about it, which might be useful. Dogen said, "One phrase, one force, myriad phenomena. One truth, one confirmation, all Buddha, all patriarch, it has never been hoarded at all." And Coben said, "When everything was given to you from the beginning, there is nothing to limit to say this is mine and those are not mine. Everything is given to you. But at the same time, nothing belongs to you. Even yourself doesn't belong to you. That means you are everything. You are everything means you have no self actually to limit." Goes around and comes back and then goes back around again. So who are we? Who are you? Our sort of basic bottom line is often feeling that we don't have enough. So hoarding materials and teachings is that sort of desperate thirst, thinking we have to keep it by us because we don't have enough ever. And even the next little bit that's supposed to make us feel better doesn't, because there should be more. That's what my cat believes. I feed her and she doesn't think it's enough. 10 minutes later, she's ready for another meal. I think, oh, darn, that's the way I am too. just never satisfied. So it's about satisfaction and certainly about generosity. So that brings us to probably everybody's favorite precept, which is no being angry. People hear that and throw up their hands. I mean, it's worse than no killing, which is also really, really challenging. Also, people throw up their hands, but no being angry. How can that be? Can it? Can it be? Which is asking, what does anger do? What is anger? What does it have to do with us? This fire in us. This rush of emotion. If you think about the precepts as about relationship, about self and other, then anger is the most clear example of self-other face-to-face. In difficulty. I've often thought it's like standing on one edge of the Grand Canyon and the other is on the other side of the Grand Canyon, and we're trying to reach each other. And the way we reach it is shout bad things at each other. Really hard, bad things. The badder and harder we can do it, then maybe we could reach each other. It's a kind of desperation that is very foolish and very natural. Trying to cross the gap that comes up between us. Kobin said, anger is basic misunderstanding. If we go off-centered, we go to the recognition of our limitation. And when limitation becomes intensified, we become very far separated from others. And anger is reaction to that state. Another side of this phenomenon is pride. So, the sense of separation is fed by the sense of self-importance, of having the best ideas, the most righteousness. And in that case, there's no room for somebody else. So you could say anger creates a gap, or it can create a wall through which nobody else can come. And then we feel tremendous isolation. That lonely feeling. And yet, of course, we are made to be angry, you could say. That it's inherent in us to upset. Our equanimity, to be upset by one thing or another. So the point of it isn't that we can crush the anger in us or cut it off in some way and make it all go away. We can't. But as with all of the precepts, this is about recognizing what is the truth of us. This is how we are. And if we don't recognize it, we create tremendous amount of damage, unnecessary damage. If we're so stuck up that we can't acknowledge that there might be another side, then we create all by ourselves, just by taking that stance, we create kind of damage. Damage to friendship, to relationship. You're wrong, I'm right. And it's very easy to fall into that. And to cling to our sense of righteousness. Well, she said that, and she said that, and she did that, and so... And you can nurse that and nourish that feeling through a whole lifetime. And people do. They separate from their family. Brothers and sisters don't talk to each other anymore. Without recognizing what's working in them. Without recognizing what's working in us. This longing to be together. And this rigidity that keeps us from touching and being touched. So this is something to take home and study for the next week. But giving it some thought tonight, you might have some insight from your own life. Nobody gets angry. Everybody's cool.
Well, I will think about anger tomorrow and go to action committee, I guess you'd call it political meeting tomorrow between some council persons and some activists and neighborhood people. The issue is affordable housing. Since the redevelopment fee agency is no longer, there's no funding for affordable housing in San Jose. Mountain View has tools, but so this is to like get something going. But I hear there's going to be some conservatives there too. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
So you're expecting the conservatives to be angry?
Well, they're not going to be in favor of any fee levied against the new development. No.
It's the real estate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The goal of the housing action.
I see. That's a big one.
Yeah, I'm just watching the emails go back and forth, mm-hmm. and these activists are really dedicated. I'm supportive, but I'm not on the phones every night, sending emails back and forth. They're very committed people, a lot of conviction. They're, a lot of them are the ones that passed the increase in the minimum wage, San Jose, or worked on it.
Do you think they're actually angry?
Well, they're they have conviction.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just going to wait and see what happens when the conservatives and real estate people come to this meeting.
Well, you'll have to report next week.
Yeah.
Let us know what happened.
Yeah. That would, the meeting, the forum was supposed to be just to have two council people there to present the issue to them, but I guess word got out, so it's kind of developing something else.
Mm, more energy at it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another way of defining anger, is just intensity of energy. So you can have very strong convictions, but then if it builds up and builds up, then it can be end up in shouting and being out of control, which is unfortunate. Well, I should probably be there too.
You want to see?
Well, it's an issue. It's an important issue.
Well, it's actually been the high cost of housing has been an issue all week on KQED.
Mm-hmm.
Longer than a week.
Mm-hmm. Jeffrey?
Thanksgiving was 13 members of my wife's family coming, which included my mother-in-law, who's always for me the person that I have to be most mindful about, because she knows my button and she likes to push it.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm so grateful that we had such a wonderful Thanksgiving and there was no button pushing. And in reflecting about my mother-in-law, I was thinking about ways in which the universe could flow in a different direction. And I got that Mary Oliver book, her poem for dogs, and my mother-in-law prefers the company of animals to the company of humans. She's marvelous with animals. She's got four dogs. And Mary Oliver's poems with these pictures are just perfect. Because Mary Oliver enjoys the company of dogs mm-hmm. sometimes to the exclusion of humans. She has wonderful things that she says about us through the eyes of these animals. And what owning dogs have meant to her. And I shouldn't use the word owning dogs, because she would argue with me on that point.
Who owns whom?
But it gave me a moment. I picked up this book and I went, here's a way of really mending a fence. And from that went another idea about doing something with my mother-in-law, who's an artist. She draws animals. She's a great artist. And I thought she and I could work on something together. Maybe a book about her dogs, which we've talked about before. She has the greatest animal stories that had never been read or heard from except a small group of people that she knows. But she tells great animal stories. She's in the company and prefers the association of animals, so she's got great stories about all of them. And dogs aren't the only animals that she keeps. So there's birds, there's rabbits, and there's chickens. She's had a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and so they stretch back over a long period of time since the time she was a girl. And if animals becomes a subject in any conversation, she's right there. But what's this got to do with anger is that this past summer I had a very unpleasant exchange with her, and how this precept dovetails into right speech. They're just so connected with human beings, because we use words to wound each other. So, yes, the Grand Canyon is such an apt metaphor for my mother-in-law and I. So I'm trying to see how the gap isn't such a chasm, and how to like create a bridge. And, I don't know. I really, when I was thinking about it, it's much more, I was feeling, if I were to define it, much more bodhisattvic about how I was approaching my mother-in-law than I typically do, where I'm a lot more like the psychologist. And, well, it hasn't worked for 22 years, so I think I need a different approach, something a little, fresh approach. So I just wanted to share that about anger and another precept that we had talked about, and how to work with it.
Well, it certainly has everything to do with speech. Yeah. And of course, the truth is there is no separation. That's just an illusion. So if we meet each other as if there is a separation, it feels like there is. But if we are convinced that there is no separation and that this is Buddha, another Buddha that I'm meeting, then there is a different kind of feeling about the presence of another. Now, whoever it happens to be, still that's Buddha. And it's our teacher as well. So that generates respect. And respect generates a kind of relaxation of those tensions that keep us apart. So it's a wonderful practice, really, this anger one. Especially if there's someone who's really bugging us. And there's always somebody who's bugging us. Invariably. Yeah, that's nice. The dogs.
Dogs.
Yes.
I'll have more to tell you.
Yes. Oh, good.
she's moved down off. She's been living in the Sierras for the last several years. She's got 11 acres that she's trying to develop. She also has a cottage over in Pacific Grove. So we're going to see a lot more of her because she's going to be a lot closer. Uh-huh. So I get a lot of opportunities around this.
You do. You've got some work cut out for you. It's good. Well, we can talk about this further next week. But see how it rises up in you and what meaning it has in terms of relationship, in terms of your own self-valuation, and how you value others.